Hi, I'm Shadow Stevens. While I'm doing this and that and the other thing at the very same time, I'm having a great time on The Jeremiah Show, the greatest show in the history of the world. For the love of God, subscribe. No, seriously, subscribe.
It's The Jeremiah Show. Tearing back the curtain on music icons, pop culture, and food gods, we're bringing you the hottest guests from around the globe with your host, Kat, and your music business authority, LA personal development commentator, Mike Gormley. The Jeremiah Show is sound designed by master sound engineer, Dr. D. He's a restaurant and bar fixer. He's opened and fixed over 200 restaurants, bars, and hotels. He's a partner with legendary drummer Mick Fleetwood from Fleetwood Mac in Fleetwood's on Front Street in Maui. And he's your radio host. Step aside, Superman, from A Race Around the Sun, Jeremiah and Kat.
Welcome to The Jeremiah Show. I'm your host, Kat, with Jeremiah here and Dr. D.
Hello.
Hi. How are you guys?
Good to see everybody today.
Doing great.
We're looking sharp with our new logos, aren't we?
That's impressive, isn't it, Jeremiah?
Impressive. Let's go on, Kat.
We're going to work our way up to impressive. I don't know that we're quite there yet. Guys, I want to tell you a little bit about who we have today. If you're like me, hovering somewhere in your 40s, I'm not going to tell you exactly where. When you push play, especially on a certain album called All the Pain That Money Can Buy by two-time Grammy nominee band Fastball, you're instantly teleported back to the late 90s. I remember exactly where I was in that time. And so that band has been a main player on the soundtrack of my life at that time. It was a really good time of my life. But it didn't stop there because they continuously released and consistently released music for, you know, since then and as recently as 2019. And I'd like to think that they've consistently kept my attention and therefore made my life just that much better because of that. Today we have with us one third of Fastball, but we have one whole bona fide talent and rock star. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Miles Zuniga. Did I say it right? I practiced.
Jazz.
Welcome to the show, Miles. Yeah, it's a pleasure. Wow. So Fastball, first and foremost, you had a few names for that band prior to picking Fastball. Some of them were really funny.
Some of the names that you have there?
Magneto yeah. USA. And then there Correct. Was one like Ed's Bible something.
That was never.
That wasn't. That's
I
false.
I wish. What Where is it called? Ed's something Bible.
Yeah, Ed's Bible something.
How did that rumor get started?
It's worth looking up because it's quite a creative name. And maybe we would have stuck with that one if we'd actually come up with it ourselves. But that was something the internet invented.
I love that. Every once in a while, we stumble on something like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of things they invent so that aren't true. But Magneto was our first name. Actually, that's not true. Our first name was Star
69.
Star 69, which... Back in the 90s, someone called you.
I just thought about Star 69 the other day for some weird reason. I'm like, does that still exist?
No one needs it anymore.
I know. I wonder if it's still there. I got to try it.
At the time, you know, if someone called you and they didn't leave a number and you wanted to see who called you, you could do Star 69. And for a nominal fee, it would ring them back.
It was like a dollar.
A name.
Yeah.
There was a band from San Francisco called Star 69. So we couldn't use it in the end. You always found out after you've done like 20 shows that there's a band bigger than you that already has the name.
Dang it.
It doesn't matter what the name was.
Yeah.
It could be something like LSD Party with Leonard Nimoy and someone has the name.
So what is Fastball? Where does that come from?
Just desperation.
Running out of options.
A distinct lack of imagination. I mean, what happened is we changed the name to Magneto, and it turns out there was a band called Magneto. from Mexico, who were pretty big, but they were like a boy band. They were like Menudo. So there's lots of shirtless on the beach, five guys on the beach.
Ooh.
We would never be confused with that. So I didn't see the problem, but then we decided to add USA because a band like the English Beat, in England, they were just called the Beat.
Oh.
But then there was already a band called the Beat in America. So they just added the English Beat.
And
there was no problem. I thought, well, just do the same thing. Just add USA and we're good. And, you know, by that point, we had a record deal and the lawyers at Hollywood were like, nah, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
And so they kept urging us to change the name. And then it just became this game of like, what's not taken?
Yeah.
Every name was taken. Every single name you could think of was taken. And you'd also have to do a search every time. You'd have to have, it isn't like today where you just get on the internet. You'd have to go through this. Hollywood guy around a search. It took a couple of days to get back. And meanwhile, we'd already recorded our first album and it was waiting to be released, but you can't do the artwork if you don't know what the band's name is called. And everything runs on these deadlines, these quarterly, to make the spring release, you have to have that stuff ready back in, you know, September.
Yeah.
It's that much setup time to get it. So you're pushing the record back. Every time you don't have a name, it gets pushed back another 6 months or something.
Mm.
So we were just like, what's not taken? We'll call ourselves Paperclips. You know, what's not taken at this point?
Get the album out there.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I came up with a name for a quartet, couldn't find one, so I just called it The Quartet to be named later. You could have called it The Band to be named later.
Mm. Yeah, I'm kind of glad Fastball's better than that.
Okay.
I think Fastball worked out for you just fine. Speaking of, reflect out loud for us, if you will, just over the last 20 plus years of being in a band and therefore in a relationship with two other guys. I have to applaud that fact. I mean, it's like less, most than more, you know, marriages at this point in time. Like, what's the evolutionary arc over, you know, your kids, you know, when you start, and not that you're not a kid still. But you know, what's that been like for you in a general way?
I mean, when you start out, you're super, we were in our 20s. So we were, you know, really cocky and really like, you know, I'm going to be the star. No, I'm going to be the star, you know, kind of both songwriters. So it's like, you know, my songs are better than your songs. You know, there's a lot of competition going on.
Mm.
And then, you know, there's definitely parts where you just flat out can't stand each other, you know, and I likened it to like fighting fish in a little tank. And then over time, then you get to where you're just like, screw this, I don't want to be in this band anymore. And then enough years go by where you realize, then you start to realize, well, this is actually really special and these guys are really cool. And they're my family, you know, you become brothers. The longer you're in it together, the more history you have together, the mm-hmm. more you actually can appreciate each other. But it didn't happen overnight.
Yeah. Well, you really grow up together. I mean, you know, I mean, 20s, gosh, the human brain doesn't even fully mature and form until like 25 or 26. And so I think, you know, it's a big deal to really
for guys
spend.
In a band, it doesn't happen until like 40.
I don't know that.
I was going to ask for rock stars. How long does it take?
We need to do an experiment on that.
Go ahead.
I was just going to jump in because I've always wondered this and how many rock star, you're a rock star. I'm sorry. I hope that doesn't embarrass you for me saying that over and over, but somebody that's so successful and you watch that movie, Almost Famous, where the lead singer makes the t-shirt where he's just the front man is the only one there and the band guys are kind of faded out in the background. And I always wondered how many, like if you, somebody like you watches that and goes, that's happened. That I thought about that. Or
no, were never that. We were kind of spared that. I think there's something about a trio where it's really weird. I mean, you know, I don't know. There are bands like Everclear where art was always front and center, but he wrote all the songs and sang all the songs. So fair enough, you know,
yeah.
Front center, the two guys are in back of him. But in our band, there were two singers and two frontmen in a band of three. So there's almost no way you could really minimize the other guy. Half of the songs were mine all the time. And I sang half the song. So you couldn't really, you know, maybe we would have benefited because Tony actually wrote and sang the big hits. So maybe if he was a bigger, you know, if he was an ass, was like a megalomaniac, maybe we actually would have benefited from him being the voice in the face. I don't know. It just didn't happen that way. It's not the way our band was constructed.
Mm. Well, the power of the triangle, and it's like, it's my favorite shape actually. and I think there is some power in that too, of just like, yeah, when it is a trio, when it is a triangle, there's real, I've looked at all of your albums and, you know, photos that you've done in my research, and you guys did a really good job of keeping that even. And it never looked like there was a favorite being played, and it always looked really even and respectful of the trio.
We never thought about it really all that much. It's just what happened. Also, not only do we each sing about half the songs, but his voice is higher, my voice is lower. We sing together all the time.
Yeah.
So there's the harmony going on all the time. So there's no way to, nor would you want to minimize the other people's effort. And, you know, if one of us left, that would be the end of the group. I mean, it's just like that kind of deal.
Yeah. And
if Tony left the band, I couldn't with a straight face.
Yeah.
Walk out on stage and say it's fastball.
Yeah. Some people do that.
Yeah. Lots of people do that.
I mean, we were talking,
we played with lots of people that do that.
There's
like one guy.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is a joke. This isn't a band at all.
It's not the same.
It's not the same. But
so I'm going to jump down to just, cause you guys released an album in 2019 and you had like an entire tour set, right? Mm-hmm. And then COVID happened.
Yeah.
So what's the plan there? Do you have shows coming up and like, are you going to start to do that?
It's super slow. I mean, there's like one show next week and then there's like, a show in Long Beach in July.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like here and there, it's just one or two shows, whereas normally our summer would be really full.
Yeah.
So it just hasn't really. And I kind of, you know, had been waiting for an opportunity to like, well, the band's not working at all. Time to go see India. Time to go see New Zealand. Like I had all these things that I want to see, but the world is closed as well. Yeah.
So it's so frustrating
because I can't go out and see these things. Now would be the perfect time because inevitably what happens is you book something and it costs a fortune and everything's like non-refundable ticket. And then they're like, hey, we got the tour with so-and-so. Or they're like, hey, we got three shows and they're super lucrative and they're all peppered through your thing. And it just screws up the whole thing.
Yeah.
That always happens. Like if you book something, it's like the game Battleship. They're gonna hit your battleship for sure. So this was the perfect opportunity. Like if it had been some kind of thing where there were no shows but the world was still running as usual, it would have been great in a way.
Miles would have been just the little dots on the map, just traveling all over.
Where's Waldo?
Where's Miles?
Where in the world's Carmen Diego?
So obviously you're a songwriter, a very good one. I want to talk a little bit about inspiration and kind of pick your brain on what inspires you. I heard somewhere, read somewhere, I can't remember, that you're a big fan of Leonard Cohen. Someone that I didn't really know much about.
Love him.
Coincidence. Yeah. Someone actually played for me this like really, really beautiful recitation by Leonard Cohen of A Thousand Kisses Deep. And it's kind of a baller move because it made me cry. It was like really, really beautiful and opened my eyes to just an entire world I just had no idea about. And so now it's like, I find myself trying to like understand Leonard Cohen and just that beauty. So as a fan of his, how would you talk about him? And second part to the question, is he someone that, because he's so different and unique, does he sort of expand your own kind of map artistically? And who else expands your map as an artist and kind of like goes, wow, I could go over there. I never thought of that. I mean,
Leonard Cohen, Tom Waits, Bob Dylan, John Prine. These are the kind of guys that are fantastic songwriters, but they also are good templates for being an old guy. You know, if you're looking at people like Mick Jagger, you know, there's only really like, I think Mick Jagger's the only one that can pull that off without looking just completely ridiculous, like prancing around at 75 or whatever age he is, mm-hmm. and acting like he's still 25. I mean, he gets a pass because he's Mick Jagger, but most people look ridiculous doing that or trying to be that or trying to be like they were in their 20s. At some point, you know, I realized, like, how do you grow old gracefully? And who's writing songs about the age they're at? That's the other thing. Who cares about, like, you know, what you cared about in your 20s or 30s if you're no longer in your 20s or 30s?
Mm.
So I think that's why Bob Dylan has stayed so relevant, because he's willing to address mortality head on. He doesn't shy away from it, and he puts it front and center about getting old and about losing things and about just having to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting stuff, and he deals with it really well. And so does Leonard Cohen. And so just artistically, they're top shelf guys, but also just as a way to live, you know, they're kind of instructional just in how to kind of have some dignity about it and not be chasing your youth all the time.
Yeah. And what about on the kind of lateral equivalent on the female side, who would you say really kind of lights you up?
I mean, probably just off the top of my head, my favorite female artist, because she's such a badass and she's so unapologetic, is Chrissie Hynde.
Oh yeah.
The Pretender. She's got such a great voice, and she's always been so authentic, you know, and mm-hmm. she just doesn't pull any punches. She put out that book and she talked about being raped in her autobiography. Mm. And she said, well, I guess I deserved it, you know, because I was at this thing and I knew what these guys were all about and what they wanted. And boy, did that, the hounds of hell came for Chrissie Hynde. Mm. Like, you should never say that. Mm-hmm. I thought she's got balls, man. She just really is who she is, and she doesn't care. She's going to tell you what her truth is, and she's not afraid of it. And I thought that was amazing. So she's someone I really look up to. But there are other female artists that, I mean, I love Aretha Franklin. I love Joni Mitchell. I love, there's a ton of them. I always thought I should, you know, if I had to marry someone, I'd marry Christine McVie. It's just like a little fantasy of mine. I'd be like, Miles, yeah, you want to go over to the, like, it's the farmer's market. Miles, you want to walk down to the farmer's market? You know, I just sort of have this whole fantasy in my head of Christine McVie. Which house do you want to go to, Miles? Got one in Malibu, one over in the south of,
miles
down there. And, and I just picture her really sleepy all the time.
You've thought this one out a little bit. I like it.
Really low maintenance.
I always think about, like, which one would you go for? Christine McVie or I can't even think of her name. Stevie Nicks. I'm like, which one would you go for? Most men probably would go for Stevie Nicks, I think.
Not our Miles. No, he wants the sleepy one.
I want some tea and just to... I just want to curl up.
Just to cuddle.
I just want to have you better?
Stay. But, you know, just to hear her downstairs. I want the loving starts. I don't even know what she likes. I don't know what she's like. I just picture in my head this whole thing. But I love her songs. I love her voice. She's got such a cool, understated delivery.
Yeah.
You know, she's fantastic.
We're going to have to send her this podcast.
Yeah.
Send it to her. Yeah, I hear you know these people.
Yeah, Mick and yeah, a few. Her best friend actually is a good friend of mine. So
I've been
to, her husband, her best friend's husband.
Her husband, don't yeah. Her husband. I've been to your. I heard you were half owner of the bar in Maui.
Not half owner. I'm one of the investors, and I opened it. Yeah, but I was the first investor in. But yeah, it's
are you
doing.
Still invested in it?
Uh huh. Yep. And we're reopened and doing well.
I really
packed.
Had a good time there, just thinking all those pictures of Mick Fleetwood and yeah. The bagpipe guy came out and did his thing. And
yeah, every night, 5 o'clock. You know what's so cool about those pictures is that I was there for 8 months opening the restaurant. That's what I do during the day, I open restaurants and bars and hotels. And I was there for 8 months, and he went up into his, you know, into his closets up in his farmhouse, into, you know, the photos that with John Lennon and JFK yeah. and all these famous people that no one's ever seen. They're just his personal photos. And
right.
he spent days with the architect and the designer, Eddie Bitton. And he laid them out on his floor and everybody looked at him. And there, he really didn't want to be a Hard Rock Cafe. It wanted to feel like Mick's house, you know, the tapestry rugs and the couches and all those photos, personal photos.
It's really great. So now, is this true? When the pirate flag is up, that means he's there at the bar?
Yeah.
Is
that a fact? The red flag with Mick with from the Rumors album.
Okay.
Yeah, so where he's.
Does he hold court? Can
we, oh yeah, Mick. He walks the floor. He's got a glass of Beaujolais, his favorite. And he walks the floor and he plays. You know, he's got his gold. He has over 1,000 drum sets, and that gold drum set there in the dining room. On the second floor is yeah. You know, his, he plays, you know, you wouldn't believe how many people pop through like yourself, these great musicians, and then they just start jamming.
That's yeah. The thing I always imagine.
Yeah. Red flag means Mick's in the building. White flag means he's not. So
I always imagine the day I fly out of Maui, that's the day Steven Tyler and Slash come down for the
right. Yeah.
And they have some sort of crazy jam.
Elton John, Eddie Vedder came through with his ukulele yeah. And he played it all night for me. Mick did. And there's just yeah, some cool stories.
Amazing. Awesome. Hey, guys, we got to take a quick break. Mm-hmm.
No.
Yes, we do. We're gonna go out to the title track on your latest album called The Help Machine. Do you want to give us a quick 10 seconds on that song?
10 seconds. You can take as long as you want. We'll move our commercials for you.
Yeah, yeah. Fine. Go ahead.
Okay. I just had this idea. I had this loop pedal, and I just had that little dun dun dun. That little riff that's there. Mm-hmm. I came up with it and looped it, and then I just started singing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I don't know why. And then I couldn't come up with, that was as far as I got, you know, I got that first part of the song. And later I was actually dating this French girl and I was trying to impress her. And so later we were riding around in the car and the song came on the radio. I don't know, I remember what song it was, but it triggered something in my mind. And I knew all of a sudden kind of what to do with the song, not specifically, but like emotionally, I just felt this thing coming in. And she was in the car with me. And so I was like, watch this. So we drove home, we got to the house, and then I was going as quick as I could to get to the piano because I knew there was something there. And I go, I have an idea. And she was like, what? And I was like, just check it out. Check it out. She was a musician too. And I got to the piano and I just went, I'm waiting online for the help machine. Like I didn't even really know what I was going to do. It just came out. And she was like, how did you do that? And I was like, I just did it.
I didn't know
how I did it. I honestly don't know how I did it. Something happened. And I got that part down. And so I'm always looking to do that. I've learned over the years to stay out of my own way. Like your subconscious knows what to do. And the hardest part is to not muck it up by trying to overthink things. Or it really is almost like a channel, and once you dial in the station, you have to let it come through. And when it's coming through, you have to get it as quick as you can because you don't know when the station's going to fade out.
Yeah.
Wow.
Totally. Well, with that, we will take this quick break and we'll be right back.
Hi there, everybody. This is Ann Hitch and you're listening to The Jeremiah Show. We are Ann
and Heather
and we are better together.
My name's Danny Trejo, and you're listening to The Jeremiah Show. And on it, I'm talking about my cookbook, Awesome. Hey, I got a documentary coming out, a record called Satisfy My Soul. Check it out. Trejo's music, Jeremiah. You're loved, Holmes.
The Jeremiah Show, your show to hear the best new music and exclusive artist interviews. You won't hear personal interviews like these anywhere else.
Hi, this is Johnny Valenti. I'm the owner of Birdland Jazz Club in New York City for nearly four decades. Going dark during the global pandemic taught me how important the arts, especially music, are to each of our cultures and our health. Musicians literally bring life and joy to our daily lives. Radio shows that support musicians and music, like The Jeremiah Show, are so important in keeping music alive. I hope that you will keep listening and supporting musicians. Please support the music. And please come and visit me at Birdland when you're in New York City. Thank you.
Welcome back to The Jeremiah Show. You have Kat here with Jeremiah, Dr. D, and then the wonderful Miles Zuniga from Fastball. We are just getting lost in conversation, having such a good chat that I want to bring it back a little bit. One of my favorite things to do, talking to people that are like you, that are just so creative and just kind of just so prolific in their artistry and the depth of what you do and what you sing and what you write, is a love to just ask about how it all started and your childhood. And I read a little bit about it. I think it's pretty interesting. There are 10 kids in your family. Can you talk a little bit about how it all started for you? I had like a built-in audience, I would say. It's like inevitable that you would be a rock star.
10 kids.
10 kids.
Wow. That's true. I come from a huge family. My parents were Catholic. And I grew up in the border. I grew up in Laredo. So it's 10 kids was probably the median number of children. Some people, one of our cousins had 17, just mind boggling numbers of children. It's like the Monty Python sketch. Every sperm is sacred, you know? So there was a ton of kids, but, apparently now, I don't know if I believe this, but apparently when I was a kid, I could sing that song Lady Willpower, which I don't even know to this day, but they claimed that I'd get up and start singing it. So I don't remember this song, but apparently that was one of my chestnuts I'd roll out when I was four. I don't know. I had an easy facility for memorizing words. So when I was a certain age, I knew all, when it was a hit, I knew all the words to Bye Bye Miss American Pie.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't like I loved the song. I liked the song. I somehow could remember the lyrics with no problem. They'd go by. They'd play it every day. So it was like, you'd hear it every day. After a while, I learned all the words.
Yeah.
So my sister was real impressed with that. But I actually didn't really think about playing music until I was in fifth grade. And when I was in fifth grade, I was already going to church every Sunday. But now, because of the school, I had to go to church on Fridays as well.
Mm.
At 11 a.m., we would go across the street. There was a church across the street, and we had to go to Mass. And we were expected to sing. The nuns would be glaring at you, and you had to, like, sing these songs, you know. And I was very self-conscious. I didn't want to sing. I was looking over at the band. There was, like, these three guys strumming guitars. And I was like, they don't have to sing. And they get to sit down the entire Mass. They don't have to stand up and kneel and sit and stand up and kneel. They get to just sit down and play their guitars and no one bothers them. And they get to go to communion first. So early on, I realized the perks of being a musician, like when I was basically 10, I was like, look at that. Check that out. These guys are like on another level. No one bugs them. They get to do stuff first. And I was like, I want that job.
And they say church won't teach you anything.
Yeah.
That's a new answer for becoming a rock star. I've never heard that one before, to get out of singing at church.
That's how it started. And then I had a crush on my fifth grade teacher as well. And she said, literally a couple of weeks after I started scheming about getting into the band, she said, I'm giving guitar lessons after school for anybody who wants to sign up. And I was like, this is incredible. I get to spend an extra hour with her. And I get to learn guitar too. This all makes sense to me.
I knew there had to be a girl in there somewhere.
Of course. So I started, she's a great deal older than me, but I started learning guitar from her. And then within, I don't know how long it took, but within 5-6 months, I had achieved my dream and I was in the choir. I was in the band and I was now no longer pestered or bothered. The nuns couldn't see me. I was just sitting there smoking in the boys' room with the other guys. And it felt great. But I actually lost interest in playing music because I didn't like those songs. The real thing that happened was, and about a year later, my brother came home from college and he saw the guitar. He said, do you still play guitar? And I said, no. And he said, why not? And I said, I got bored. And he showed me how to play Band on the Run on the guitar, which was the same chord. Once I realized, I already know how to do this. I just need to know which chords go where. That was a whole new ballgame. Then suddenly, play music again.
I love that. Hey, on that, let's take another quick break and then we'll come right back to it. Cause I want to know when you started writing, you know, after that clicked for you, then when did the songs actually start coming for you? So we'll talk about that when we come back. We'll be right back.
This is the Daniel Emmett Show. I've stolen this moment from our host, Jeremiah. He's asked me to give you the title of the song, Che vuole questa musica stasera. And that is a song that I fell in love with when I heard it for the first time, used in the soundtrack of the movie The Man from U.N.C.L.E. back, I believe it was in the mid-2010s, and just had to record it, and it is going to be a part of my upcoming album releasing later this year.
Hey, you're listening to The Jeremiah Show. I'm Zeke Cam.
And I'm Taylor Morton, and we made the movie The Last Blockbuster that you can get from Blockbuster Video on DVD Blu-ray combo at benblockbuster.com.
The Jeremiah Show, the only place to hear the Mike Gormley host interview series, bringing you iconic music business managers, musicians, and the players who have created your favorite music from 1960 to the 2000s. Find all of Mike's past interviews in the Jeremiah Show music catalog on thejeremiahshow.com or your favorite podcast sites.
Welcome back to the Jeremiah Show. We're here with Miles Zuniga from Fastball. When we went out to break, you heard Fire Escape. And coming back in, you heard The Way, which I have to say, ever since I knew that I was going to talk to you today, Miles, I have heard that song so many times. It has played, it was on the news this morning. They played just the instrumental going out to commercial break on like national CBS, you know, news.
Really?
Like it's been playing in
my
car.
You got paid for that.
Yeah, I hope you got paid for that.
That song's been a financial pleasure the whole
yes,
time.
Yes, I bet, because it's just, and it's just so good. I have a question. So a good friend of mine, I was mentioning that I was going to talk to you today, and they were like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. And then they're from Belton up north here of Austin. And they said that song, The Way, was written about people that like went missing in Belton.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Is that true?
I don't know if they're from Belton, but
oh, okay. So can you tell us a little bit about like what that song is about specifically?
Well, okay. Tony wrote that song. He wrote it. We were trying to get as many songs as we could together. I guess he was having writer's block or something. And our A&R guy said, do what John Lennon would do, which is pick up a newspaper or something and just write a song around a story in the newspaper. So that's literally what he did. And there was this elderly couple that had gone missing. They were going to a family reunion. They never arrived.
Oh, wow.
And he wrote the song about that as a starting point, but he didn't know what had happened to them. So tragically, they were found hundreds of miles from their destination in a ravine. They were in an RV and they both died. It's a tragic story. But that isn't really what the song is about. That was just a starting off point for the song.
Right.
But the morbid fascination with the story did actually become part of the song. Everywhere we went, people would ask about it. And then, the more we got asked about it, the more it got broadcast, the more we get asked about it.
Yeah.
I remember a woman at some radio station that interviewed us said, "Tell that story. Wherever you go, tell that story. That's a hook. Tell that story." So, you know, we did, but really the song is about freedom. The song is about just picking up and leaving. And that's what people respond to. So many people have come up to us and go, that's my song.
Yeah.
And really they're all talking about a different aspect of their life, but it just resonates with people.
Yeah, and it just translates into different facets. Well, good. That's new information for me. I didn't know that it was based on a newspaper article until like last week. So, all right. So let's jump back in, because I know when we went to break, I want to. We were talking about you being what grade? Your brother came back from college. You had given up gun guitar, and then he kind of like reframed that for you and showed you, oh, whoa, you already know how to play and you can kind of do your own thing. So when did the writing start? Did it start immediately, or did it take some time for you to go, I think I want to pour something out?
For some reason, I started writing. So I guess at some point the Beatles became my favorite band, and John and Paul and George. We're all great songwriters, and that was kind of part of their deal. Even if you just had a cursory knowledge of the Beatles, you knew that they were like even in 1977 or 8 or whenever this was happening for me, they were already acknowledged as kind of the giants of the 20th century as far as rock music, pop music. It had only been not even a decade since they broke up, but they were recognized as they are the Rodgers and Hart of the pop songwriting world. So it seemed like everyone wrote songs, you know. Elton John wrote songs. David Bowie wrote songs. There wasn't too many artists around that didn't write their own songs. I mean, now it's pretty common again. Mm-hmm. And it was common before. But since the Beatles, everyone wrote songs. So I was like, well, that's part of the deal. You know, you don't just play guitar, you also write tunes. And so I started writing stupid songs when I was 12 or something, 13. I wrote my first song. It was called "I've Got the Girl and She's Got Me." Like, aww.
Know how to play it?
No, maybe. I don't, you know, maybe the middle section. I don't know. It was a dumb song, but it was just, you know, you have to write a million dumb songs to get one good one. So it was the first dumb song.
Aww. That's so awesome. And you haven't stopped. I mean, you're writing all the time. In fact, aren't you part of Bob Schneider's song club or something like that?
Yes.
Yeah. How's that work?
Bob Schneider's song club for men.
What's the subscription? Monthly subscription?
Yeah. How much does that set you back a month?
He spits out a prompt. It doesn't have to be the title. You just have to use it in the song. Mm-hmm. And it's merely a device to get you to get up off your butt and write a song. Mm-hmm. So this week he really gave us a bad one. It was "Caterpillars on Your Bush" was the prompt he gave me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I did what I could with it. I wrote a song no one will ever hear.
You're not going to play it for us. What's that? You're not going to play it for us.
No. Well, I'll recite the first verse. Who's the man with the pretty face? Who's the guy with the big briefcase? Who's that hippie with the red guitar? Who's that douchebag in the Jaguar? I'm trying to get around all the caterpillars on your bush. There, that's...
That's, I kind of like it.
That's what I wrote.
I like that.
I would probably change the title.
Yeah.
But the other lyrics are pretty good.
Yeah, I like it.
That's the thing. You're just generating
talent. Ideas. You got talent, my friend.
Thank you. You're just generating ideas, and some of those ideas become sort of spare parts. It's like a big junkyard of ideas, and there's good ideas in there. Yeah. And you can probably fashion a really nice automobile out of the spare parts. So, and sometimes you get lucky and you just get a great song all in one.
Yeah. I don't think people realize the, you know, the physicality of like exercising that muscle and that skill of writing a song. It's not, it's sometimes a lot of work, right? Would you say?
It's discipline.
Discipline.
And,
yeah.
And you want, I met so many people that call themselves songwriters, but they're not really songwriters. And they always make the same mistake, which is like, I have to be inspired.
Right. It's
like, well, you're never going to do anything if you're waiting around for inspiration. Yes, inspiration is the rocket fuel that really gets the job done. But as they say, the muse likes to see you working. So if you're just sitting around waiting, you're wasting your time. You need to be disciplined about it, and you need to do it as often as possible. Do it all the time. And what happens is, the best thing that happens is you lose your preciousness about it. You know, the worst thing you can do when writing a song is thinking, I'm writing, Someone Saved My Life Tonight right now, or I'm writing Yesterday, like this is a masterpiece. No, it isn't. It's just another stupid song. Get it done. If you take out the preciousness, you will get it done, and you'll probably will write a better song than if you think this has to be perfect. Because when you're creating, think of it as cement. As long as the cement is wet, you can go anywhere. Once the cement dries, you're screwed. You can't, can I say that? You can't, you can edit it out, I guess.
Yeah, I'll look it up.
You're screwed. You can no longer create. And when that happens to you, it's because you got attached to an idea. So you created this idea. It's a pretty good idea, but now everything has to be as good as that idea. And now you're paralyzing yourself. It's not as good. What am I going to do? It's like, forget it, man. Just forget it. Just write the damn song.
Yeah.
Loosen up. Throw out that verse you love so much. Throw in the trash and start again. Because then you're free and you can do whatever you want. And the song will be better for sure.
I love that. Well, speaking of songs and better songs, one of my favorites, we're going to take another quick break, and we're going to go out with Working on a Love Song, which is one of my favorites on These Ghosts Have Bones. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about that song?
I wrote that song with a guy. I was at this songwriting sort of like the Bob Schneider thing, only transplanted to a very glamorous location. It was in Italy. It was in a villa in Italy. All our meals brought to us. Like, it was incredible.
A diva.
Beautiful countryside. And all you had to do was write a song a day, and you were paired with people. And it was the guy from Squeeze, Chris Difford. Mm-hmm. He organized it, and he'd pair us up with people. I got paired with this Scottish guy named Aresti, and he was really hilarious. He would, these girls came in that were also writing songs. They go, we're having trouble. We need some ideas. What's your favorite quality in a woman? And I said, patience. And Aresti said, amnesia. That's the kind of guy he was. And
what a pair.
It was my last day there. And I was trying to write a song for my now ex-wife. We were married at the time. I was trying to write a love song for her, but as you might suspect, writing love songs is very difficult. They've all been done. There's a million of them. And so the best I could do was write a song about trying to write a song for her.
Love it.
That song's about.
I love it. Well, with that, we're going to take another short break. I think it's our last break. Thank goodness. And enjoy Working on a Love Song, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jeremiah Show.
Hi, you're listening to The Jeremiah Show. This is Zeri Romeo. I am a contestant on season 20 of The Voice, and you can catch me on all my socials at Zeri Romeo.
One, two, three.
Express
soul. I'm working on a love song before I get home. Can't get you on the phone. I can't get no dial tone. So I got drunk on the train on my way to Rome. Working on a love song before I get home. All the faces, all the lights. I'll be home tomorrow night. I've done two for the money, one for the show. Working on a love song before I get home.
It's Carter Rubin. I was privileged enough to be crowned the winner of season 19 of The Voice. You can go listen to my music on Apple Music, iTunes, YouTube Music, and Spotify. And you're listening to The Jeremiah Show.
Check out The Jeremiah Show Facebook and YouTube pages for exclusive videos of our Jeremiah Show guest interviews.
Welcome back to The Jeremiah Show. This is when you know you have that we have a really great guest on our show. When Kat and I and Dr. D, we all fight over you. We're fighting over Miles for fastball. Miles, we all want to ask you our questions, and we're kind of pulling you apart here. But you're a fascinating guest, and we could really probably do many, many shows and never get to know you completely. You referenced Relevance and Bob Dylan as one of the references, Mick Jagger, Leonard Cohen, Relevance, and that these guys are still relevant. Why are you still relevant, in your opinion?
Oh, don't ask me that. I found a journal from 2000.
You're front man. Ego, go ahead.
I found a journal from 2000, right when we were promoting the follow-up to The Way, and we had to go all over Europe, and they one of the questions they asked over and over, I found it just yesterday, so it's funny you asked this question. They were all asking, how are you still relevant? And in my journal, I wrote, we're not. That's what I feel like telling them. So I don't worry about stuff like that. I really don't, to be honest. I don't care if I'm relevant or not. I really don't. I do it because I love it, because I can make a buck at it.
And that's probably the answer.
I love doing it, and I'm making money. It's like, don't tell anybody I love doing this. I do it for free, you know?
Well, you've been we keep using the word, but a rock star. You really have been in the forefront and been and hit after hit for decades, which not many bands can say that. They're on maybe a couple of hands, you know, that you can count, that bands that can say that and have done that. With that perspective, how has your journey differed from what your younger self thought about? Did you think about becoming as established, as big as you are, as much of a as relevant as you for decades now? When you were younger, how has that differed from your younger self's perspective on what you wanted to be and what you are now? Has anything?
I thought that the getting would be what I was after, you know. What I wanted was to be on the radio. What I wanted was to sleep with all these beautiful women. What I wanted was to do a bunch of drugs. What I wanted was to have a great time. And what you realize over time is like all those things are fine and dandy, but that's not really why you're doing it. You're doing it for the sheer joy of doing it. Much like, why do you swim laps? You know, if you're a swimmer, do you swim laps because you're trying to get somewhere? That's ridiculous. You're not doing it to get anywhere. You're not doing it because you have to do it. You're doing it because it gives you pleasure. Just the act itself gives you pleasure. Playing the piano, the act itself gives you pleasure, you know? Mm-hmm. Going for a walk. You don't go for a walk specifically, usually, to get anywhere. You go for a walk because it's pleasant. So it's the same. It's the act itself is going to actually be better than almost all the other side rewards that come with the job. All that stuff is just temporary pleasure. And like all pleasure, it just fades out. It doesn't sustain you. It's not, there's nothing inherently valuable about it. What's valuable is the act itself. That's self-sustaining and it always feels good. It's free to do. It makes other people happy. It's like right. A great, beautiful thing.
I think that might be part of why some of these bands like yours, like Fastball, live for so long is because they can feel, ultimately, we can feel what you feel when you write the music. It becomes our song and our anthem and a testament to some period in our life that we're going, and an experience we're going through. We different listeners hear different things, but they gravitate also to, you can tell that the musician or the artist like yourself loves what they're doing. And I think that's, it's genuine, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And it's not just throw away junk food. It's something that you can feel and you attach to it.
I did evolve over time. Like really when the real artistic growth, if you want to call it that, occurred was, in this, there has been a trough where like we had these hits and then boom, it's like nothing's happening. And, you know, the plane has descended from, you know, 10,000 feet to just above the trees. And, you know, it's during there that you really have to figure out like, what am I doing this for? Why am I doing this? Do I want to keep doing this? I always wanted to keep doing it, but I had a profound shift where I realized, why am I doing this? And before it used to be like, so I can have fun, so I can do this, so I can get that, so I can get.
When did that shift come to you? That profound shift?
Came to me eventually where I realized if I have a job, my job is to take away people's troubles for an hour. It's to make people smile and make them forget about whatever's bugging them for an hour. That's my job. And so I stopped thinking about me and started thinking about myself almost like I was a missionary or a Red Cross worker or someone who's helping people. I was like, your job is to go out and put a smile on people's faces or to make them cry, you know, like that's your job. It's not about you. The other 23 hours can be about you.
I was going to ask if you had to write a job description as a front man, what would be on that? And I think you're answering it a little bit here.
Make people smile or make them move them, you know, take them somewhere. Don't waste their time for God's sake. Get out there and do your job. You're an entertainer. Your job is to entertain. And that's all there is to it. Don't mess about. The best bands don't. You go see Bruce Springsteen. Does he have anything to prove? No. He comes out and he plays like four songs in a row without stopping. There's no like, hi, everybody. There's no small talk. He just goes boom, 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 boom. And then he might say hi, but he doesn't waste your time. And none of the really great artists do. Paul McCartney plays like a 3-hour show. I hardly see him take a sip of water. So you go see a band at a bar and they're like in between songs in eternity and they're scratching their ass and they're like drinking beer and they're making banter that's not funny or anything. They're wasting your time.
Yeah. Miles, giving so much of yourself though, that does take a lot as the front man, as the performer. Does it ever take How do you feel that when you go home? Do you get a lot out of it? I imagine you do from the audience, but does it take a piece of you when you go back to the hotel room and the countless, the town with no name?
It's draining. It does take a toll. I did this thing where, like, if I'm flying, like we did a tour of Spain and then we went to England and the tour ended and I'm like, I've never been to Ireland. I want to go to Ireland. And the airfare is already paid for. Like the flight in and the flight back is already paid for. All I have to do is buy a round trip to Dublin out of Heathrow and I'm good. So I go on the trip. Well, you're not taking into account that you just finished a 3-week tour and you may not no longer feel like visiting anywhere. You just want to crawl into bed.
Yeah.
But like you didn't take that into account 4 months ago when you bought the round trip to Dublin, you know? So then I've had that happen to me a lot where you're like, man, you're
sounds like it.
Dumb idea. The last thing I want to do is stay in another hotel and get in another flight and like, oh God, and deal with the logistics. Yeah. So it does take a toll. And you do have to be aware that it will take a toll.
Well, there's so many people that like us that want your time and we want to hear from you and your perspective. And we've learned a lot this hour. I think this has been a really fun time with you and getting to know you. I just have one last question because you're both in Austin, Texas, and I know you support local musicians and you know, the hot new musician that was like you years ago. Who do you like? A couple people in Austin. Do you like a couple bands you want to give a plug to and give them a little boost? People that you go see or hear?
I mean, I'm not the person that really asks about unknown bands, you know, because I don't actually go out and see. I'm just not that person anymore. I used to do it all the time. But now it's like, oh, let's watch Fawlty Towers on Netflix. What do you say? That's really what I'm like.
Stay home.
Yeah. I do like, you know, I like the Black Pumas. But I've never seen them live, but I like their music. I'm kind of clueless when it comes to that. So I don't, there isn't anybody really on my radar where I'm like, oh my God, that person's amazing. And because if there was, I'd probably be trying to do something with them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, Kat. I'll let you close it out. And just wanted to thank you again, Miles. Great.
Thank you.
Great meeting you and talking with you.
It's great talking to you too.
One final question in the video for the way you jump off a building. Did you really jump off that building? Are you also a stuntman? What don't you do, Miles?
No, I didn't jump off the building. Tom Cruise's stuntman jumped off the building.
Really?
Yes. And
to me, I'm not look, surprised.
To make it look more like me, he wore my leather jacket. This was a leather jacket that had tremendous sentimental value to me because I bought it in Berlin when I was broke and I was lost. I was right before I put together Fastball. I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. And I bought this jacket and I had it the whole time when I, all through getting to finally having a hit song and all this. And this guy wore it so that he looked more like me and did the stunt flawlessly. And then he signed, the jacket had a little thing in here and he signed the inside to Miles. It was like, it made the jacket even more special. And then I left it in a hotel room in Toronto and never got it back.
Oh no.
Like a few days later, literally. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
On the road.
Well, thank you. I can't thank you enough for spending time. It's just been a blast getting to know you. And maybe after COVID is done and you guys consistently get back out on the road and put some new music, we'll definitely would love to have you come back.
I would love to come back. I had a great time.
Awesome.
Come see us in Santa Barbara, both of you.
I want to do that.
Yeah, let's do a Santa Barbara trip. We'll crash the station. Gotta get
the Santa Barbara Bowl. Have you played there, by the way? Have you played at the Bowl?
I don't think we have.
Who knows?
I don't know.
Places. Sounds like a true rock star. Okay. Communicate, listen more, and evolve. And everybody have a great week. Thank you, Miles.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No one knows. where the wind is gonna blow my mind. Another day slept, and I have wasted so much time goes by.
Listening to the Jeremiah Show. I am Miles Zuniga from Fastball, and you can find me every Tuesday at 7 p.m. at www.facebook.com/MilesZunigaLovesYou. I do a live stream. I'd love to see you there. Thank you.
Hi, this is comedian Maj Chobrani, and you are listening to the Jeremiah Show on AM 1290 KZSB Santa Barbara. Listen, man.
Do you need help with your restaurant or hospitality business? See how we can help your business at hjlrestaurantadvisors.com. Check out our website at thejeremiahshow.com. We are on SoundCloud. Please subscribe on iTunes, podcast The Jeremiah Show. Did you like our soundtrack? Find all of our soundtracks on Spotify, The Jeremiah Show. As always, a big thanks to Dr. D for making our voices come alive on the airwaves, and to our station manager, Les Carroll, for letting us on the airwaves at all. Be sure to check out our very own Richard Dr. D. Dugan's Peabody Award-nominated radio show, Tell Me Your Story, every Sunday at 7 a.m. and again at 7 p.m. Thank you for listening to The Jeremiah Show with Kat and Dr. D. Listeners, we appreciate you and want to hear from you. Please send us your ideas at thejeremiahshow.com. Follow us on Instagram at The Real Jeremiah Show. The Jeremiah Show is produced by executive producer Jeremiah Higgins and sound engineer Richard Dr. D. Dugan. Have a great rest of your week, everyone.
Communicate. Listen more. Evolve.
They were beautiful. The most beautiful.